I'd like to call to order the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee meeting August 6, 2024, 4:00 p.m. Notification of Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting rooms. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. Roll call.
Butler?
Here.
Gap?
Here.
Bonet?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
And Sherman?
Here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
We have a motion?
Second.
And a second. Roll call.
Gap?
Yes.
Bonet?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Butler?
Yes.
And Chairman.
All right. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice. We have that and will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, USGS groundwater quality presentation. Philip Paints and Michaela Cherry, USGS.
Good afternoon, directors.
Afternoon.
So we have our annual presentation here from USGS on the groundwater quality results from last year. Last year, the in-depth studies were done around the Platte River, and they did it for more specific treatments or testing. And then they just did regular, normal, smaller panel size of the rest of them. Michaela here is going to give you a good rundown of kind of the results of the major constituents that we test for, and give an idea and a fun new little thing that we agreed to do in terms of age dating of some of the groundwater that they're doing this year to try and get a little better idea of how old some of the groundwater is in our district and some of these wells. So that's really fun stuff. I brought a book with me if you guys want to know about some more of this age dating, because it's really fun, actually, because you get into the cool sciencey stuff. And so without any further ado, here's Michaela.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michaela Cherry from the USGS. Like Philip said, we'll go over a little bit of the background of the project, our sampling results from last year, how sampling is going this year, and some places for getting data and publications and other things that we've done. So this might be really boring to you guys if you've heard it every year for the last 32 years, but we have been collecting groundwater quality samples with the Papio NRD for the last 32 years, and this is to support the groundwater management plan, looking at contaminants such as nitrate, atrazine, arsenic, uranium, a whole other suite of nutrients and pesticides as well. And so there's kind of two parts to this. So the first part is that we've kind of divvied the NRD into four main aquifers. And so this past year, like Philip said, we did the Platte and Elkhorn aquifers. And so we go and focus on that specific aquifer for a year and then rotate through every 4 years. And these are mostly privately owned wells, so like people's houses or irrigation wells, or sometimes small municipalities as well. And then the other half of that is the monitoring well clusters. And so these are the dedicated monitoring wells that the NRD has, and these we sample every year, regardless of what aquifer they're in. And so this is some of our sampling from 2 weeks ago in Sarpy County. And so for last summer, we have a total of 58 wells that were sampled, 30 of those samples in the Platte Elkhorn alluvial aquifer, and then 28 monitoring well cluster samples that weren't in the Platte alluvial. And so you can kind of see all of our sampling locations on the map as well as all of the aquifers. And so we looked at over 30 constituents. I'm not gonna go over all of them. I just picked some of the main ones that are often of concern to people. But looking at major ions, trace elements, and nutrients, and then we also screen every sample we take at our lab for pesticides. And if we get a hit on one of those samples, say like it shows a positive for atrazine, we We'll send it into the USGS lab for further analysis. We normally never get a hit on any of them, and so we pick 5 samples at random to send to the USGS lab just to make sure that like our lab screening process is working. And so we didn't get any hits on either our lab or the ones we sent in to the USGS lab this year. So nothing popped up for any pesticides. Okay, so on to nitrate, one of the concerns in general in Nebraska. Overall, the Platt and Elkhorn have fairly low nitrate overall. It's not a large concern in these aquifers. The one well that we normally look at is the one down in like the bottom right. It's one of the Sarpy County wells. So that one consistently has some results over the recommended 10 milligrams per liter drinking water. So this is kind of what those wells look like historically. So it's a 3-well nest with deep, medium, and shallow. It's currently in a phase 2 water quality management area, so it's already in an area that's being more actively managed. And the deep and the medium well kind of seem to be leveling out or maybe even decreasing slightly compared to previous years. So that's like a really nice thing to see, that perhaps some previous management policies that have gone into place are finally showing up. One of the downfalls of water in the ground is that it takes a while for the water to get there, for you to see the results of what you're applying on the land. And then the shallow well is trending up a little bit, but it's still well below the 10 milligrams per liter line, so something to continue to monitor, but showing some small improvements there. And then so the next result I have is arsenic. So this is something that's a naturally occurring contaminant, and it tends to be present in alluvial aquifers like the Platt and Elkhorn, so around aquifers that are near rivers. And overall, it's not, honestly, like from our results, we didn't see a lot of arsenic compared to other alluvial aquifers that we've sampled. There were a couple samples that were above the drinking water standard, but overall, like there's not like a large concern in these aquifers, which is really nice to see. Iron is also a very common, I wouldn't say it's a contaminant because there's not a health-related standard, but a common analyte that we see in alluvial aquifers, and so there's no health-related standard, but once you get over that 300 micrograms per liter, you start to see staining on like your toilets and your tubs and your sinks and stuff, and you start to taste it, and so that's why the recommended 300 micrograms per liter is there. It's kind of just for an appearance thing. And again, we see a few wells with elevated iron, but nothing particularly high. People generally know if their wells have high iron in it. And then we have 2 more of these contaminants. So this one's manganese, again, very common with alluvial aquifers and very common in these alluvial aquifers. And so the drinking water standard in terms of taste and appearance and staining is 50 micrograms per liter, and then there's a health recommendation at the 300 micrograms per liter. So generally you're noticing that there's manganese in your water well before it's like a health standard level. It tends to taste really bitter, and you get black staining in your like tubs or sinks. And so overall, this is fairly high in a number of the like private wells that we sampled, but not particularly elevated in the monitoring wells that we sampled. And so this is also something that the city of Lincoln has been looking at in the past few years, because they've also seen an uptick in manganese in their municipal, like city of Lincoln drinking water, which comes around like the Platt Ashland area, so kind of the same area. And then so the last one is uranium. The drinking water standard is 30 micrograms per liter. Overall, the uranium is very, very low, with the exception of the shallow well at Venice, which is that high 48 micrograms per liter. And then if we look at this well over time, it kind of seemed to peak in like 2012, 2013, and then has dropped down significantly and is now kind of bouncing up and down. This well is close to a few pumping wells, and so we think that the changes in uranium is related to that pumping going on and off in the water levels. And so as the water levels are changing, it can change how much uranium is dissolving into the water right there. And so one of the things I looked into, because I was like, how do you actually deal with like high uranium water? If you have an RO device, like to get rid of things like manganese or nitrate or something else, it can also handle uranium as well. So it's not like a, I recognize that an RO device is already like a specialized thing that you need for your house, but you don't need anything beyond that if you have uranium. However, we didn't see any elevated uranium like anywhere close to a drinking water standard in any of the private wells that we sampled or a lot of the monitoring wells. It's just that shallow well at Venice has some weird naturally occurring uranium. And then for 2024, we're doing the upland aquifer this year along with all the monitoring wells, and those are the monitoring wells clusters that you can see. So far, we've done 28 of the cluster wells and 25 of the 30 domestic wells. Corey is going out tomorrow to get, I think, 3 or 4 more of the domestic private wells done. So we're really close to wrapping up sampling for this year. And in addition to the standard sampling that we're doing this year, we're also doing, Philip mentioned age dating sampling. And so we've done so far 14 age dating samples in the Dakota wells, specifically the Dakota monitoring wells. And so for this, we've collected helium tritium samples, SF6 samples, stable isotope samples, and N2 samples. And all of these combined will give us a relative age of the water in those monitoring wells. And so this is funded by the USGS. We had extra funds this year, and we wanted to apply them towards, you know, some of our projects, and we thought this would be a really good project to apply it towards. So that's kind of where this came from and where the money came from. And so age dating can give insights into how old the groundwater is, what the recharge rates look like, so how fast is it recharging or slowly is it recharging, and that can kind of tell us a bit about aquifer vulnerability, so like how vulnerable is the Dakota to contamination from either like the overlying alluvial aquifers or the upland aquifers, and contaminant movement and things like that. So that's kind of what we're trying to piece out with this extra data that we're collecting for the Dakota. So if you're looking for either data we're collecting or other data in the state, it's available at the for the USGS at our NWIS site. So there's a site specifically for Papio related groundwater quality. There's also just like all of the USGS NWIS data for the whole nation, or there's a mapper data. It like shows a map of all the sites and locations for groundwater surface water. You can go and pick things that way. You can also find all of our data and other NRD's data at the Nebraska Clearinghouse, and so that has mostly pesticides and nitrate, but again, there's like a mapper tool. It's really nice. You can play around and pick specific wells and see all of that data, and we upload all of our data into that too, so it's there as well. And then since last time I talked to you guys, we published a report, not directly related to this project, but related to the Papio NRD groundwater, so I wanted to bring it up. So for this project, we looked at using this visualization tool, GeoScene, to look at the geology and groundwater in Sarpy County, western Sarpy County. And so we used a lot of AEM data, airborne electric modeling data. Magnetic, thank you, Jenny. I was like, I'm missing the M. And so it bounces resistivities off of the ground, and it can tell you where the groundwater is and the different like geologic layers. And so you can kind of see that in that picture right there. And then so we paired that with well data that we have, and you can go through and look at this well, we can see we're this far into the Dakota, or we're this far into the overlying aquifer, and this is how far it is from the groundwater and things like that. And so we have that, and then Philip also has a copy of like the model itself to go in and look at that more in depth. And that's all I have. So there's my I didn't mean to end, sorry. There's all my contact information, so, and also the offices. So let me know if you guys have any questions, and I'm happy to scroll back to other slides if I went too quickly.
Thank you, Michaela. Do you want to say anything? Oh, you didn't want to say. Okay, well, do we have any questions? Any questions from the public regarding this item?
We do. Yeah.
Have you noticed any significant changes?
Where? Anywhere?
Yeah. Worth mentioning.
I will say, like, you can see the bit of the drought for the last couple of years a little bit in like just overall, and then the, hold on, I don't want to like blind anyone. I don't think there's, all right. The Takema wells, which are this set right here, always have some interesting water levels. They tend to be really variable, and the water quality at them changes with those variable water levels. And so that well I've always just found interesting in terms of like, I wouldn't say it's trending one way or other, but it tends to be pretty variable, and the water quality changes with those water quality levels.
That's a wellhead protection area besides anyway, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and so how much difference do you see? Like significant amount, like up or down 20 feet, 30 feet?
Like a foot or
two. 2 feet, okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I can speak on that just a little bit. So I did do spring water level checks this year as well as last year. And overall, a lot of the wells had a pretty decent recovery here this spring. I haven't been out yet. I will probably go out here end of September, early October, and do fall water checks. As people start harvesting in, I can actually go through the fields again instead of having to walk through 30 acres of tall corn. And so far from what I've seen, what I've heard from fall to spring, a lot of wells were up. There's, I think, maybe four or five that were down slightly still compared to the fall. And I, considering how much rain we've had and how little irrigation compared to last year that has actually occurred in a lot of these areas, I don't expect to see large declines like we did last year, where I was seeing declines of 4 or 5 feet in some aquifers. So that's kind of where we're sitting, is that most of the drops that had occurred last year were in the 2 to 3 feet range. And of that, a lot of that recharge and rebounding of groundwater levels had occurred by spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so come here this fall, I'll see what happened from fall to fall, which is scientifically the more interesting information.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Michaela, are you speaking today just about the wells that you are cooperating with cost share with the NRD? Do you monitor other wells for other entities such as the MUD with wells in the same close proximity to ours?
Sometimes, so like when I mentioned the like domestic wells or private wells, sometimes those will be MUD wells, like if it just so happens that that's a well in our aquifer we're trying to target.
Mm-hmm.
Generally that happens when we're sampling the Missouri, because that just tends to be where some of those wells are. I don't think we sampled any MUD wells.
And are the results similar, or is there any disparity? How do you decide which area to focus on, like the upland? Is it a round robin, or are there some specific chemicals that you're focused on?
It tends to be around, it's a round robin. So we sample
it's
this.
It's a four-year cycle.
So it's a four-year cycle. So this year, this past year was the Platt Elkhorn, which we combined because they are a bit smaller. This year it's upland, next year's Dakota and then Missouri, and then it like starts to cycle over again. And so within the specific aquifer, we try to get as the best coverage we can throughout the entire aquifer, so it's not like everything down in Sarpy County or like everything up north. We try to like expand as well as possible. And finding wells is kind of based on who responds to our letters. We send out 100 plus letters to landowners based on either who we've sampled from before or just like whoever we can find, and then whoever responds yes, that's kind of how we go with.
Okay. Thank you.
Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a few questions. You mentioned atrazine and no hits this year, or is that in the entire district or the sampling, or
so
just in a certain area?
Let me find the full map. So for all of these sites, there are no atrazine hits.
Okay. Well, that's
so
good.
Mostly just the Platte Elkhorn, but we have the other aquifers covered as well.
That's good news, because I know U.S. Fish and Wildlife is very concerned with that for the atrazine causing sterility in fish. And I had a question on the in Venice, that high uranium, does that exceed the safe drinking water standards?
It does. So the drinking water standard for uranium is 30 micrograms per liter, and the Venice shallow well is currently at 48 micrograms per liter.
Okay.
And so it's been kind of bouncing around that level, like drinking level for the past couple of years.
And then you mentioned the age of this water. Do you have any dates yet?
We don't have any dates yet. We just finished sampling last week.
Okay,
so
that's a little suspense there.
Yeah. The sorry about that. Build suspense for next time. We'll have.
Thank you.
Just to follow on that, atrazine being a main component in Roundup and other herbicides, but you also mentioned you didn't find anything, no pesticides is what you said.
No, so I will be honest, I don't have the full suite of what we sample for in terms of pesticides, but there's 26 of them in like the pesticide, like atrazine, and then like 26 other components that are considered pesticides is the full suite of what we test for, and none of them had a hit for any of them this time.
It's pretty shocking, isn't it?
Not so much for groundwater. Surface water, if I told you I went out and sampled a bunch of lakes and rivers and didn't find any pesticides, I'd be like, are you sure? But groundwater tends to have less pesticide in it overall, especially if you're talking a well that's 100 feet deep. It takes time to get things to grade. I'm not saying there's not any pesticides in any groundwater in the region, but overall we tend not to see a lot of it, to be honest.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Item number 7, agreement with Omni on Little Papillon R14 replacement. Pardon?
Good afternoon. Another meeting, another culvert. That's the real thumb. But go to the map, Bill, second page. This particular structure is located north of Grover Street, north of I-80. In other words, it's near a place called, used to be called Flynn Paving, now it's called Omni, and so it's an asphalt plant. It's also south of Baxter Arena and so forth. We had planned to do this work in this culvert actually as part of the Group B rehab project. So a couple years ago, we identified this as being deficient. At the bottom of the pipe is basically gone. But in the meantime, we had some discussions with Omni because they were doing a redevelopment of this property. In other words, putting in new facilities for asphalt work and as well as replacing their storm sewers. So we started looking at that, and they had actually a plan to put in a 36-inch diameter storm sewer system in their development. Well, our outlet is a 24-inch pipe, which is, first of all, that's kind of a red flag. It's a problem because you're making a big pipe go into a small pipe is never a good thing. But we started talking about the idea of maybe instead of us rehabbing this pipe, which is basically putting a liner in the pipe, and it's very expensive, is there maybe an option of putting a new pipe in, just a brand new pipe as part of their storm sewer system? And they we're receptive to that idea, and so we've got to the point tonight where we're talking about this, and it's they have a proposed project which would cost $257,886, of which we would pay, the district would pay majority of that cost of $253,656. We looked at the cost of a 24-inch pipe, just put new pipe in, which would be really a district's share. What's that worth? And that's worth $253,000. They agreed to pay the additional cost of upsizing it to 36-inch because they're the ones that caused the bigger size requirement, really, in a way, because they're putting a storm sewer in. We looked at that compared to what Houston had developed an estimate for rehabbing this pipe is going to cost another $145,000 more. So it's actually still less than doing what would be taken if you do rehab the pipe, because rehab, a lot of times, you end up replacing part of the pipe and you shove a new liner through it, so you're really doing the pipe kind of twice. This is doing it once, and so it's intuitively it's a little less money because of that reason. So basically, the bottom line is this is a cost share to pay them to do the work. They're going to do the work as part of their storm sewer system. District reimburse them for up to $253,656, and they would pay the other $4,000 worth of that cost for that structure. They have actually a bid from their contractor, who is Backland, provided a bid in this amount of money. So we know it's a known price, in other words, towards this. So that's kind of an overview of everything, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. I know you may have some questions on that, what exactly is going on here. So
thank you very much. We can have a motion on this item.
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
So this would be the only 36-inch culvert on the rod, I guess, if you will, on the creek?
The others
are 24-inch?
No, we have the pipes vary throughout the project. We have the pipes that are 48-inch, 42. This is just happens to be a 24-inch, which is usually the smaller end of the spectrum, you might say. A lot of the pipes are bigger than that. And
part of the rationale is because it's more surface, it's got a drain.
When they do a redevelop, a lot of times they end up putting more concrete in, so there's more runoff. And then it's also because this is an old development. Flint is built maybe, let's say, 50 years ago. Well, a lot of the hydrologic requirements have changed, and so now the pipes are bigger than it was maybe 40 years ago, 50 years ago, because more runoff and just the calculation technique has changed. And so they're doing it for whatever the city has required them to do as far as sizing. And so that's why it's 36 inch.
When I drove by yesterday, there's a boom in the creek to collect petrochemicals or whatever. It used to be Zimmer Oil there. And is there seepage going on that they're going to cover up, or is that part of why that boom is in the creek to try and collect the chemicals?
Good question. There is the actual business right north of the creek there is called Nebraska Iowa Supply, which is basically a fuel supply company. And so they're actually south of, let's see if I've got a marker here. I'll probably not do this right. Where's the arrow on this? Is there an arrow?
They bought out Zimmerman years ago.
Okay, anyway, sorry about that. I screwed up. Anyway, I'll go back to the regular size map. sorry about that, Bill. The asphalt plant is at the north end. You can kind of see where all the grayish stuff is going on. So Nebraska Iowa Supply has got apparently a petrochemical leak, or seepage, probably a leak out of one of their tanks. And so they did monitoring. They're doing a bunch of groundwater wells next to the creek. The district has allowed them to do that so they can sample. And they're tracking it for Nebraska DEE to see what's going on there and try to figure out a solution. But it doesn't affect really, Omni didn't cause it. It's not their problem. It's more their neighbor's problem, really, the petrol.
Again, right, Zimmer Oil used to provide racing fuel. And they've been gone how long, Tim?
Oh, it's been a while. I mean, quite a while.
Yeah. Over Little Leagues across the creek.
Yeah.
And we'd see the big old tank over there when we played the field. So is that boom in the creek part of what the old oil company, which they inherited, I guess, right? Omni?
I think Omni doesn't really own, again, the fuel supply company, but Nebraska Iowa Supply.
They're still there. They own that property.
They're still there, and they're actually, you can see the tanks if you look really closely south of Omni. But they're going to have to, they're required by Nebraska, basically, to clean up the mess. And so they're trying to figure out, first of all, where it came from. They're thinking it came from the tanks, obviously.
Okay. Separate topic.
Separate topic, but it's the same area.
All right, then.
And so that's why the boom is there, basically, to collect. I think
is not going to help or eliminate it.
No, it won't make a difference, really. I think Omni is the interested second, neighbor, because they want to know how it's going to affect their property, probably, if it's leaking.
Okay.
But it's going towards the creek, which is everything. Always wants to go down to the creek. That's the goal of all water, I think, in the area next to the creek.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Any other questions?
I'd like some clarification as to why that's our expense.
We're gonna have to replace it anyway. So we could replace it for $400,000, or we can replace it for this amount. So we save about $150,000. Yeah, they have to do the work, and we would have to replace that pipe anyway as part of our phase B of the culvert rehab or culvert replacement. So it's actually saving us $150,000 by partnering with them.
The culvert's actually owned by the district, so the channel improvement project area, it's that part of the is what we're doing is actually in the channel right away. And so you might say just a timing issue worked out for the district in this way. We would have been spending, like I said, $400,000 doing it on our own, but by Omni coming to this project, we're saving some money for the district, for people, taxpayers. So it's a win for both parties, I think, in a way. But just the timing worked out.
Any other questions?
Are there a lot more culverts coming up again like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Group B is like 40-some culverts, and that's, as you maybe know, last spring you approved a contract with Houston to actually design those. And so we're actually at the stage now where we're going to be probably bidding that this fall. Assuming the Corps gives us approval to go ahead, we'll be bidding that. That's going to be like a $7 million construction project, but that's going to start to go probably about two fiscal years, probably start this year and then go into 26. But so this is one of those. It would have been actually, instead of being, let's say, 46, is now 45. This is one of the 46. We were going to do it anyway, just that the time worked out with Omni to do it now. So
Jason's Corps requires it. They don't help you financially at all, right?
Right. It's our responsibility as the operator of that project. So we have responsibility of the Corps to do work. They don't give us any money for it, except after a flood event, they do help us repair sometimes things. And so you'll be seeing, as a side note, we've actually submitted to a request to the Corps for about 100 different sites on the Little Papio, Big Papio, West Branch, and also R613 for flood-related damages from May of 2024. So we're hoping the Corps will help us with, let's say, 10 of those sites or 100, maybe 890 of those sites. So there will be some, at that point, the Corps will actually pay either 100% of the cost or 75% of the cost, depends on where it's at, but they'll be paying part of the cost for repairing the creek bank that maybe is sloughed in or eroded or something like that. So we do get money from the district, from the Corps, to help us in things like that, but normal O&M, they don't really help you. It's just you're on your own because you took the project over years ago. So right. It's one of those things.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
Howard?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
And
hi. Item number 8, grant agreement with NRCS for the Davis Creek Watershed WFPO project. Chair Shimada.
Good afternoon. Bill, could you go to the map? I think that's on the second page. We need to kind of bring everybody up to speed because the board approved a contract with JO Consulting to complete a PIFR for this project, which they completed it, turned it in. We turned it into NRCS in February of 2022, so we've been patiently waiting to get to this point where we have funding for the watershed work plan. It's the Davis Creek Watershed. It's in southern Burt and northern Washington County. You can see on the map, it's pretty much around the town of Herman. And the main purpose of this project will be to stabilize the upstream watershed to prevent sedimentation in the Burt Washington County Drainage District. We think there's a lot of opportunity in this project. And I know several constituents that own property in the watershed are kind of anxious to see what the possibilities are as we are, and that's what the watershed work plan would provide. On the 24th of July, we received notification from NRCS that they approved the Notice of Grant Agreement Award, NOA, for the watershed work plan in an amount of $900,853. And we recommend that the board subcommittee approve this, recommend it to the board, so we can get this project going. And I would entertain any questions.
Thanks, Terry. We can have a motion on this item.
Move with staff recommendation.
A motion.
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Director?
I have one brief question. How long do you think that would take, Mr. Flackey, as far as developing this plan?
It's typically a 2-year
study. Identify yourself.
Mike Blackie with JEO Consulting. Typically, it's a 24-month time period. In this case, it's 18-month is what's in your contract. So we'll do it on an 18-month schedule.
You have public meetings along the way?
Yes, that's required. A minimum of two is required.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have a question for you. It's 100% for design, but what is predicted cost share for construction?
It's correct. It's 100% cost share for the study phase. That's 100. The next phase is the design phase, which is 100% paid for. And then in this case, for the construction phase, since this is ag water management, I believe it's 75% is what I believe the cost share is.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Good.
Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Gap?
Yes.
Bennett?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Item number 9. Amendment number 1 with JEO Consulting Group for the Davis Creek Watershed WFPO project. Terry?
As I mentioned earlier, in October 2021, the Board of Directors approved the selection of JEO to complete the preliminary investigation feasibility report, or the PIFR, for the Davis Creek Watershed project. We have the approval from NRCS to proceed with the funding. So this is the next step, is to enter into a contract with JEO to provide professional services for the watershed work plan. And after working with JEO, specifically Mike, they've come up with a not to exceed amount of $803,980. It would bring the total contract amendment, this amendment with Amendment 1, to $832,510 is the not to exceed amount. And as a note, in the first phase, they were well under budget as far as the not to exceed amount. So I will applaud them for that. And there again, NRCS is going to pay 100% of this. So we do this, we move forward and get this project going.
Thanks, Terry. We have a motion on this item.
Move with staff recommendation.
Got a motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Bennett?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Aye. And that completes my report.
That's okay. All right. All right, moving right along. Finance, Expenditure, and Legal Subcommittee. This meeting is called to order. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear the staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the directors' discussion and action. Thank you. With that, quorum call.
Conley?
Here.
Gibson?
Here.
Henningsen?
Here.
Corning?
Here.
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second.
All right, McCormick moved and Conley second. Roll call.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Here.
Aye. The proof of publication of meeting notice has been posted. All right, item number 6. General Manager John Winkler the 2025 proposed budget, fiscal year 2025.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this is draft two of the budget. We discussed draft one last month. Again, we're estimating a 2.5% increase in the valuation or in our tax levy. We will get, I'm assuming, about a 7 or 7.5% overall valuation increase when the final valuations come out in late in August. So that will drop our mill levy. It's projected right now at 0.31324, but that's at 2.5%. If it goes to 7, 7.5, we'll be at three cents or below, which will be the lowest since 2001. So the changes in this budget are very few. They're highlighted in yellow. I did provide you guys a spreadsheet, kind of the changes that occurred since the last draft. We had some updated information from the county treasurer that we had to make that change, drafting and engineering supplies, some materials for the I&E department, maintenance dam contract work that was adjusted, probably got some new numbers, more specific. The conservation assistance program, that was a discussion. We raised that $200,000 to $700,000, working with Terry and talking to Director Japp, and obviously the request from the public. We won't know the truly the extents of a lot of the terrorist damage that was as a result of the storms this summer. So we boosted that up, and then we also will work with NRCS and our other partners to assist and see what that damage is and get that repaired. MOPAC Trail, I did send an email to everyone regarding the request from Ashland Fire and Rescue. They had a couple of teenage female girls that were dragged underneath the tree debris on the Lee Bridge. They don't know how they made it out alive, but they made it out alive. And so it's a big concern because the channel is starting to go in that direction, and there's quite a bit of debris from the floods and from the high water night in this year. So we have a agreement with Lower Platte South, NRD, and the Game and Parks to put some money in our budgets and to get some estimates to take care of that tree debris. Obviously, we asked the railroads and NDOT to take care of their bridges. We need to take care of ours as well. So that way that is adjusted. There's some small changes to construction and land rights on trails. And then obviously the MOPAC trail contract work, those three items are tied together. There was some changes to Washington County Rural Water and Dakota County Rural Water for contract work and operation reserves. Again, those weren't major. So that is all the changes from draft one to two. I did also on the back list our last 5 years of valuation increases and our property tax, the actual tax taking. And you can see valuations over the last 5 years averaged 8.39 increase. Our tax request was 3.62, so it's a difference of almost 5% less than what the valuation increase was that we could have taken and other entities do. So I think we've done a fairly good job, not only over the last 20 years, but specifically over the last five. Also, Director Henningsen had a question on our kind of multiple year agreements or contracts that that we get into kind of the 110% issue with. So Amanda and her people put together a sheet here that lists. We really only have four that are kind of multi-year that are signed, that we know what they are. And then we also put a kind of list of items that will be, but we don't know because there's really no contracts or there's no agreements written yet. So we really can't estimate that. But we looked at these. We looked at these together as a management team, and we're fairly comfortable that we have, in fact, budgeted enough that we should be able to cover those this fiscal year without going into that 110% margin. So be happy to answer any questions on that as well. But I know Director Henningsen wanted that, and so we put that together for everybody to take a look at. Other than that, there isn't. I mean, it's our budget's this, you know, kind of the same thing. We just continue to do projects. Multiple projects every year. Like Martin said, we have a lot of maintenance projects coming up. We have hundreds of spots on our Papio Creek system that need repaired. We may get federal help. What percentage, we don't know. Maybe we won't. So We just continue to be able to hopefully be flexible and respond to all the needs that we need. So happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right, with that, anybody from the public wish to speak? Sean, you're on.
Thank you, Director Bradley. Sean Malatz, Omaha, Nebraska. Just a couple of quick ones. I haven't written them down, so I apologize. But on page 43 for the Papio Creek Watershed Partnership, it appears that some of the dues have not been collected per this budget. I was just curious who hasn't paid in and if they have paid.
We'll get, I don't know off the top of my head, but we'll get you a list. And I'm sure we've sent them an invoice. We'll get them.
And then with respect to the terracing and the repairs, I appreciate you guys listening and taking that on. I hope that we can somehow come to a resolution to try to not make too much paperwork, because I know it stretches out quite a bit if you're going through NRCS, right, as far as the payment and, you know, grain prices down and everything else.
I'll task Terry with limiting the paperwork, a paperwork reduction act.
Yeah, because the more paperwork, the less farmers like to do the work.
We always try to make it user-friendly.
Depends on the user. Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you.
I appreciate it. It works one way.
Thank you, Sean Malatz. Anybody else from the public? Any directors? All right, this is a non-action item.
Yeah, we need to vote to forward it to.
Well, then, that, any directors?
You need a motion?
Yeah, you need a motion.
A motion.
We need a motion there.
Need a motion.
Is this, this not this motion?
It's information.
It's not this
motion. Yeah, it is. Yep.
I'll move that we go by the draft to. Motion as drafted here.
Yeah.
Second.
All right, McCormick moved. Davidson second. Roll call.
Anderson?
Not voting.
McCormick?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
Do I go back to design extension?
Abstain, yeah. He didn't pass.
Yes. All right. And just to, I don't know if the general manager, Winkler, had let everybody know, August 8th, public input and approval. September 10th, budget hearings adoption. And then September 12th, the adoption of the fiscal year 2025 budget.
Thank you, Larry. I forgot that.
All right. Now, moving on, item number 7, Missouri River Levee System Unit, R616, R6. 13 OPPD right-of-way easement, Martin Cleveland.
Thank you. Go to the map, Bill. You might recall we had a little project called 613, 616 improvement project that occurred last number of years, and so this is really an outcome of that project. Go down a little further, Bill, to where the, yeah, right there, that'd be great. This location is actually south of Offutt Air Force Base. You can see the runway there. South of Fairview Road, it's actually east of Highway 75. And so along the creek there, there was some power poles that were in the way of the levee improvements that we did. So they took the poles out so we could build the improved levee. So this easement has basically allowed them to put poles back in, but beyond levee footprint. So that they're actually in the district's right of way, but they're not actually on the levee. So it's kind of an outcome of that improvement project. It's like a year or two later after things are done, now it's time to move the poles, put the poles back in. So easement doesn't involve any transfer of money between either party, so they're getting a free easement, but which is our standard procedure with Power District and other entities like that, is to provide free easements for right-of-way they need on district property. So that's kind of an overview of why we're doing this, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have on it.
All right, thank you. We have a motion on this, and then we can move on.
Need a motion.
Need a motion?
Vote staff recommendation.
Second.
All right. It's been, now we can talk. Anybody from the public wish to discuss on this item? Directors.
What was the cost to move the poles? Did they charge us to move them so we could do our construction?
I'm sure they did, Al. Well, okay, I'm not sure. I wasn't involved at the
pole. I'm sure they charged.
No, I don't think on the project.
We can check for sure, but.
Would you?
Yeah.
Other questions? Seeing none, roll call.
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. All right, item number eight, license agreement with NDOT for I-80 widening, Eric Williams.
Great. We purchased land along a former railroad corridor from about Giles up to Q Street. We constructed and opened the West Papio Trail in 2018. That former railroad corridor is protected by the Surface Transportation Board, so we're not allowed to sell that land. So we have developed license agreements for others who would use a portion of the land while allowing us to maintain both the trail project and, per the Surface Transportation Board, maintain the corridor for potential future rail reactivation. That's not going to happen, but we still have to do it. So we have a license agreement for NDOT to do some construction on the right side of the westbound lanes. The piers are already out there in place, but they plan to come by and install the girders and construct the additional lane on westbound I-80 over the top of the existing trail. The trail is operated and maintained by the two cities, La Vista and Omaha. This is right on the boundary between the two. Both of them are aware of the project, and so this agreement would just give NDOT the rights to construct, operate, and maintain an additional lane of Interstate 80 westbound in the area above the trail on the rail corridor. Property rights here are very confusing because of the age of the rail corridor and the interstate, and so the agreement is written in a way that NDOT agrees that they have the rights to do what they have been doing, we have the rights to do what we have been doing, even though the original documentation about the property rights is a little bit confusing because it's so old. And there's not money involved here. We're just allowing them to construct the additional lane of the interstate. There is a map that shows where we're talking about here. So you can see the interstate there. You can see the West Papio Creek in blue. So this is kind of generally the entire area under and around Interstate 80. I don't think they're building an eastbound lane at this time. I think it's just the westbound lane, and that's the only one that would impact the trail, which is directly below. Again, Omaha and La Vista are already aware, so everybody's on the same page. So our recommendation is to authorize approval of the license agreement for NDOT to construct, operate, and maintain an additional lane of the interstate.
All right. Thank you, Eric. I may have a motion on this project.
Who's the recommendation?
Second.
Conley and Davidson. Anybody from the public wish to speak on this item? Directors?
So this agreement allows them to use this as a throughout the entire construction process?
Yeah, they'll probably do some staging down below so that they can access up to the interstate, and that's why Omaha is involved.
That'll close the trail for extended period and there'll be no detours?
Probably, that's something that they'll work out with Omaha, who operates the trail. But NDOT has pretty strict guidelines about maintaining other transportation access. And from the map, you can see that Harry Anderson Ave also runs under the interstate in the same location. So I would expect that they probably will maintain some level of transportation through there, maybe with some kind of an overhead structure. We've done similar things. Really, the only time we would probably need to close anything would be when they actually have the equipment to hang the girders. Other than that, they can probably do just protection for the people below. But they haven't specified what exactly will happen during
that's typical, but not in this lease agreement?
It's not specified here because we don't operate the trail, so they'll need to talk with Omaha about operations of the trail. The only reason we're involved is because we continue to own the property where it is located, so NDOT wants to talk to the property owner, which is us, and we are saying yes, and then they will talk with Omaha about, I don't remember if there's federal funding and like 4F requirements, that kind of stuff, about what impacts the trail there will be.
Thank you.
Are they putting piers in the right of way, or they just need access for the construction and the air
rights?
Access
for the construction, and then it's kind of an aerial right for the overhead. The piers are already there.
Okay. Outside of the right of way?
I'd have to look back on the map. They're already constructed. I can't remember if they are. I think they would have been constructed maybe before we acquired the right of way. They put the piers in a long time ago, anticipating a future lane, so they are pre-existing now.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Seeing none, roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
Davidson?
Yes.
Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes. With that, FEL is adjourned.